Okay, fantastic. So when I wrote the title of this presentation, I was obviously moderately angry, and that's why it was a dark and stormy night in Lune Planum. But actually, what I really wanted to talk about was Lune Planum. And basically, I am going to introduce a very brief history of Lune Planum today, and then I'm going to talk about a couple of things that I've observed whilst I was working on Lune Planum that make me think a little bit that we have a proper research project there, and something that maybe I will want to discuss later with Jonti. So, first of all, where is Lune Planum? Lune Planum is this big expanse of land. Naturally, it looks very flat. It looks like there isn't much to go for there, because here you have the beautiful Tarsis Montes. You have Olympus Mons here, which is the biggest volcano in the solar system. Other recent volcanoes like Alba Patera. You have Valles Marineris here, Ares Valles here, Casey Valles all over there. So, obviously, you have a great bunch of geological stuff going on here, and why would you want to concentrate on this little area there instead? So that beautiful stuff that you just saw before, Olympus Mons, the Tarsis Montes, were actually produced in the last period, in the last geological period of activity on Mars, the one that we call Amazonian. It is a relatively long period, if you think about it. It's 3 billion years long, so there you would expect a lot of activity happening then. It's all lumped into the Amazonian. But, in fact, when we look at Lune Planum, and you look a little bit more in detail in this figure here, where you also have an indication of the contour lines, the elevations, Lune Planum is clearly defined. It's, geologically speaking, a Hesperian terrain. That's why we are using here the geological notation HR. So Lune Planum is in fact a Hesperian terrain. The Hesperian is actually the shortest one of the geological periods on Mars, only 0.7 billion years. And so we are thinking, why was this geological period made so short? Because the length of this geological period is largely a matter of geological convention based on number of impact craters, etc. Because, in fact, there is this geological evidence that this period, however short, is, in fact, a transitional one in which there was quite a lot happening, even though it may have not created these beautiful mountains, these beautiful volcanoes, these beautiful rift valleys, as we saw before, and as we see in the Amazonian. In fact, at a much subtler level, there is quite a lot of geological activity happening very fast and very relevant and very important. And it's something that very few people focus on, because observing and studying a planet from remote access, like we do now, is not very easy. So naturally, you focus on the structures that are more apparent. But truthfully, the Hesperian is, in my opinion, one of the most significant times to be looking at Mars. So let's go back to Lune Planum. What we know in terms of how we date the surface of Mars and other terrestrial planets in the solar system is based on the density of impact craters. So just to give a little short course in geology here, this would be the oldest terrain in this picture, because you have a lot of large impact craters. This would be the youngest, because you have very flat, smooth surface. And as you can see, Lune Planum here is kind of intermediate. As we mentioned earlier, this is how Hesperian terrain. However, the important thing that you may also look at is that as you move from the oldest to the youngest, you have a diminishing rate of volcanic activity. And why am I saying this? Because if I look at Lune Planum, I see on the surface some very subtle structures that indicate to me that there is quite a lot of very thick layered strata here that can only be of volcanic origin. But if in the Hesperian deposits of volcanic origin arrived all the way here, reached all the way here, and in the Amazonian only all the way here where the volcanoes are, so obviously we're also looking at a decreasing rate of volcanism as we move from the Hesperian to the Amazonian. if we zoom in into Luneplanum, we have a look at a bunch of features. Some are very evident, like impact craters, and some are much subtler. These ridges that you see here, they're called wrinkle ridges. They are called wrinkled because if we were to further zoom in, we would see that there is a kind of granulation on the top, like a wrinkle exactly. And in Luneplanum, as you can see, these wrinkle ridges tend to be equally spaced. Now, wrinkle ridges are interpreted, and they have been found on other terrestrial bodies, the Moon, for example, Mercury as well, and they are indication of compressional tectonics. In other words, there are here thrust faults that emerge on the surface, and their surface expression is as wrinkle ridges. But they tell us a lot more than that. They tell us that this compression has occurred because we have very thick strata, and the weight of the strata themselves cause eventually the strata to compress on each other and generate these blind thrust faults that then are shown this way. There are very interesting papers that have been done in the past on Mars. I'm going to show some data from Montesi and Zuber, one of their papers, that use wrinkle ridges to infer the depth of the crust in Luneplanum. And in doing so, we also get an understanding of the thermal evolution of the planet overall. So this is just a structural aspect of wrinkle ridges. This would be a thrust fault, which is more or less buried, and it expresses itself on the surface as a wrinkle ridge. You need, in order to have wrinkle ridges, very, very thick layers of rocks. And here we have the change in the heat flux on the surface of Mars as we move from the Noachian, which is the oldest time period on Mars, all the way through the Hesperian and then the Amazonian. And clearly, as you can imagine, the planet is cooling down as time progresses. And in the Hesperian, the heat flow would have been characterized by this type of heat flux over here. With this kind of thermal condition and considering the thickness of the layers in Luneplanum, then you can make a rheological model. The one that applies here is this one, whereas you have a very deep crust, and because of the depth of the crust and because of the combination of heat flow that you have here, at some depth below the crust, you have that the crust itself changes its rheological behavior, i.e. its strength behavior, from a brittle one to a ductile one. So you have wrinkle ridges where you have blind thrust, which imply brittle behavior, and the spacing of in Luneplanum of the wrinkle ridges is basically dependent on the possible depth at which this blind thrust can occur, which ultimately depends on the transition between the brittle and ductile behavior that you have in the crust. So just by looking at those wrinkle ridges, which look like nothing, I mean, you need to have a rather trained eye, we already have a very clear understanding of what is under Luneplanum. The thing that made me very curious about Luneplanum, though, was the distribution of the impact craters. Here, again, we have impact craters. They are very clearly identifiable. These are layered ejecta here and fluidized ejecta here, as the ones that Rita showed this morning. So obviously what this means is that these impacts have occurred on material which may contain some volatiles, and they are all over the place. But the thing that attracted my curiosity was the fact that there is quite a high concentration of these doublet paired impact craters. So why are they impacting all together, all in the same place? And these are just some small examples. So I'm going to skip the others because I only have very limited time. This actually I took from the web. This is some guy that's writing on the web about precisely these features here, these doublet impact craters. And he is actually saying that it's impossible that these things are produced normally or naturally. These must be the products of some worms or some humanoids that are building the craters just next to each other, because otherwise it makes no sense whatsoever. And that made me moderately laugh. But in fact, there are mechanisms whereby we have these couplet doublet impact craters, and that's the curiosity that I have, therefore, and the question that I want to explore is, I have looked very, you know, over the surface of Mars in different terrains, Noachian all the way through the Amazonian, but I find those doublet impact craters only where the impact craters layered, where the impact craters ejecta are fluidized, and only in Hesperian terrains. Is there a reason for that? Why is there these concentrations of doublet impact craters only in those terrains and in those conditions? So some of those doublet impact craters have been interpreted in the past as being due to secondary craters. So you get an impactor, it impacts on the surface of the planet, and then the planet itself breaks up, and then you generate more impacts from the secondary material. But there is a way to figure out if you have had a secondary process, because your primary will be relatively circular, but then the secondary will have odd shapes. This is not what we are observing there. Another possibility is that you have an impactor here, and then once you get into the atmosphere of Mars, you can break it because it tends to break due to friction, and then you have two impacts. But even though that has been modeled, and it's a possibility, even in the thin Martian atmosphere, you would generate only very small dimensions of impact craters, which was obviously not the case there. So other mechanisms which have been advocated involve the fact that you may have binary asteroids, you may have tidal disruption, or you may have asteroids which are themselves very fragile, so once they get into the gravitational field of Mars, they can tend to break apart. And all of these are quite likely. But the fact that we have these concentrations of doublet impact craters only in certain terrains and only where there are fluids made me think that maybe what we are looking at is a process in which you may have a tidal disruption because of low angle of impact, and that low angle of impact may in fact be consistent with the rotation axis of the planet being more inclined than it is at present, and that would be the conditions on Mars when you would have had a wetter planet, where you therefore could have had also a fluid-rich kind of substratum. So, in conclusion, the Hesperian is the shortest epoch, but it has a very fast transitional geology, which we need to understand. The plains have subtle morphologies, but they are hiding significant processes. And in the impact crater record, highly porous volatile-rich material is evidence, maybe anomalous asteroidal activity in this area of space, but what if it is a low entry angle, and therefore it relates to the climate? So we need to study this more, and I think that's quite an interesting aspect that I had not even considered, but will from now on statistically and also physically. Thank you.